Wisconsin's Afternoon News is on the air, broadcasting live from the Annex Wealth Management Studios at The Avenue in beautiful downtown Milwaukee. Here are your hosts, John McCure and Julia Fellow.
50 years ago, in a secluded portion of northeast Wisconsin, a five-week-long standoff between Menominee Native Americans, the National Guard, and the surrounding community served as a flashpoint and a century-long struggle between Native Americans and the federal government. WTMJ's Adam Roberts explores the occupation of the Alexian brothers, Novidiites.
I would kill that son of a so fast it'd make your head swell.
The time has come for all persons in the Shawnee and Menominee area to heal its wounds.
It's the first time I was ever under fire.
If you visit West 9711 Butternut Road, 10 miles northwest of Shawnee today, all you'll see is a dilapidated stone mansion built for the wife of a Nabisco executive in the late 1930s. But just after midnight, New Year's Day, 1975, some four dozen armed members of the Menominee Warrior Society would storm the building, aiming to reclaim the land for the tribe. By the next day, the standoff had begun.
Be on the lookout for two subjects. With knapsacks.
The National Guard formed a perimeter, and local police quickly cut off power and water to those on the inside. Negotiations were slow, and tensions were high.
The key to this standoff is the attitude of the Indians inside. Will they give up in return for immunity from prosecution, or will they try to hold out for ownership of the land they now occupy?
I think they would have died for their cause. They were pretty clear on how much they wanted it.
Photographer Al Bergstein was the lone journalist with an unfiltered look inside the Novitiate during the standoff. He says agitated residents in nearby Gresham, Wisconsin, began to take matters into their own hands.
Every night, the locals would drive up to through the woods. I would say they were within 100 yards, probably, if not closer. And they were firing what I would consider to be semi-automatic weapons. I mean, there was a lot of bullets flying around. I was, like, crouched down behind the window wall, and bullets were flying, ricocheting all over the room. It was really remarkable that no one got hit and hurt, because the Indians were returning fire to those guys. So it was remarkable that neither side had any casualties.
The standoff would attract national headlines. Media attention led to the arrival of members of the American Indian Movement, along with Milwaukee civil rights activist Father James Groppi and even actor Marlon Brando. As part of documentarian Kevin McKieran's coverage on the standoff in 1975, Brando noted it was an experience unlike any he'd had before.
We were up on the roof and the bullets started to fly all around us, and there was a sudden change of reality. It's the first time I was ever under fire.
The credit for the lack of bloodshed during the standoff is owed to the negotiation tactics employed by National Guard Lieutenant Colonel Hugh Simonson.
Colonel Simonson did not want this to escalate to violence. He was doing his best to keep the lid on the thing, and I think he was doing a good job, frankly.
Our plans are to, as expeditiously as possible, exit those 40 souls from the Abbey.
Do you have a game plan?
We sure do.
But after over a month of little movement, tensions were ratcheting up once again. Memories of the deadly Wounded Knee occupation in 1973 were still raw, and both sides realized the longer the standoff continued, the more likely things would escalate to bloodshed. So on February 2nd, a deal was reached where the Alexian brothers would sell the property for $1.
The time has come for all persons in the Shawnee and Menominee area to heal its wounds and to ensure a constructive outcome from this distasteful conflict.
The following day, 39 Native men and women surrendered to the National Guard and were later arrested, officially ending an often forgotten chapter of Wisconsin history. Five Natives, including leader Michael Sturtevant, would be charged. Only three, including Sturtevant, would see prison time. Adam Roberts, WTMJ News.
To learn more about the standoff and to hear the full interview with photographer Al Bergstein, text STANDOFF to the Sighting Unlimited talk and text line, 855-616-1620. The Milwaukee Public School District has announced three finalists for superintendent. We now know who they are. What are the biggest hurdles that they will face? What are the obstacles looking the district in the face? Alan Borsick is a senior fellow in law and public policy at Marquette and he's written about education for many years. Alan, thank you so much for being with us.
Glad to be here.
When you see the three candidates, and we now know their biographies, we know their history, I think two of them aren't even currently in education. What do you think about the three candidates?
Actually, I think it's a pretty impressive list. None of them are from the Milwaukee area as far as their education backgrounds or personal backgrounds. Joshua Starr was the superintendent in Montgomery County, Maryland, a number of years ago, and which is suburban Washington, and had a national reputation then as being a pretty effective superintendent. Brenda Caselius was the superintendent in Boston at one time. The third person, Andre Townsell, is supposed to be a rising younger person. You're right that Starr and Caselius are currently like doing consulting and that kind of stuff, but they both have national reputation. So it's actually a pretty good list, people who have real records of working with some success in urban districts.
It looks like Joshua Starr is at least a graduate of UW-Madison, but Milwaukee is a bit different from Madison. What did he do in Maryland that really turned things around there?
Well, he's an effective administrator by reputation. He was very focused on achievement and improved achievement in the district. It's Montgomery County is a very complicated district. It's got some well-to-do areas, some not well-to-do areas. And he was generally respected as a really smart, effective administrator. Not that he didn't have critics. Every superintendent does. But I remember following him 10, 15 years ago thinking, this is a pretty interesting guy.
Alan Borsick is with us on WTMJ. Alan, what is the most pressing issue that whoever ends up in that chair will be facing?
Oh, the competition is so stiff. certainly with the release national test scores last week, and Milwaukee did terrible, so academic achievement is way up the list. They're going to have to face some very difficult decisions on closing schools. They've got the huge controversy about putting cops in schools. They've got the money mess that started last spring and hasn't been resolved entirely, although it appears they've made quite a bit of progress. They got a lot of criticism coming in the state legislature as the state budget shapes up. Just keeping good teachers in classrooms and dealing with a system that's been so battered, man, the list is very formidable. So any of these people, my heart kind of goes out to them.
So do we want someone who is young and spry like Andre Townsell who can take on this?
Not for me to answer, but I think that's exactly the way he'd be looked at. He's supposed to be kind of a rising effective person. He's in a very small district now. The entire county where he's the superintendent, Maryland has countywide districts, is just east of Washington, D.C. It has less than 100,000 people, and the schools are fairly small. So he's never worked in a major district the way Brenda Caselius and Joshua Starr have. But he apparently made a really good impression in his interviews because he made it to the final three.
Alan Borsick is with us on WTMJ. Alan, you know this industry, you know this business better than the rest of us. Does MPS lose potential great candidates because of the mess, because of the situation, because of the headlines?
That's a tough question. I would assume so. I mean, it's not easy to make this an attractive job. It's one of the lowest performing districts in the country. Or you could say, wow, what a great challenge. I can really do something that's important and good here because the need is so high. So I think that's what these three people are saying. So, yes, I assume they lose people, but I give the people involved in this search, including the consultants that were hired, some credit for coming up with some names that are people who are really worth giving a look to.
It seems like Dr. Brenda Caselius, since she was in Boston, that's, you know, comparatively a larger school district that maybe dealt with some issues that we're dealing with. And she also knows a lot about public service, at the city level.
I meant to look up the number, but Boston is certainly bigger as a metropolitan area and such than Milwaukee, but the school district is actually smaller than Milwaukee, just by a little bit. So it's about the same size district. They do have very similar problems. Boston as a whole has a history of dealing with its academic needs, including for low-income and minority kids, better than many places in the country, certainly including Milwaukee. I've written about Boston over the years as a place that really pushed reading achievement, high school graduation qualifications, teacher qualifications, Boston and Massachusetts together. So she was part of events there that spoke to setting fairly high academic standards, which is something I'm sure the school board people are looking for at this point.
Hey, Alan, I know this will all be negotiated via contract, but what would the average length of time be for that first contract? The new person's going to want to come in and have time to turn this around and do the hard work that needs to be done. What would be typical for a commitment to make to a person who takes the job?
The norm, at least for Milwaukee, and I think for almost all Wisconsin districts, is 3 years. So they'd probably get a three-year contract. It'll probably be $250,000 to $300,000 a year. Keith Posley was there for 6 years. His two predecessors were there for 4 years. The person before that was there for 8 years. So it's not a lifetime job for hardly anybody.
Well, they all look
tough job.
They all look good.
They do. They look impressive on paper.
Yeah, but what's going on with us is such a headache. They're going to be requesting a lot of money. A lot of compensation.
I'm sure that's true. To be honest, when I saw the list, I was more favorably taken with it than I expected to be.
Wow, that's good, because you're the most respected education journalist in our city. You've been doing this for quite some time. We always appreciate your time and your perspective, Alan. Thank you so much.
Thanks for giving me a call.
Alan Borsig, Senior Fellow in Law and Public Policy at Marquette. A major change because of a major investigation that we've been telling you about. And the guy who launched the investigation, James Stratton, is with us in the studio. It's the no license ticket policy. He is from WISN 12 News. James, good to see you. Thanks for being here.
Thank you, guys. Always good to be here and always appreciate you highlighting what we're doing.
We have been following this story, and it's a fascinating story.
Absolutely.
Give us the background. What did you discover?
Yeah, we basically discovered what many call a loophole in state law and the state classification of a driver with no license. So if you don't have a license and you don't pay that first no license fine, always a traffic ticket in Wisconsin, your non-existent license becomes suspended, and then you continue to rack up suspension tickets for the non-existent license that you never had. When in reality, the second time you're caught without a license, if you do pay that OWL first fine, should be criminal charges according to state law.
You should be arrested.
Right. So basically what we found is police across the state are issuing ticket after ticket, some with 35 plus, to drivers who have never had a license, giving them suspension ticket after suspension ticket.
Yeah.
Wow.
I mean, he had dash cam video and body cam
incredible
video of the officers like, oh my goodness, this is the worst driver ever in Milwaukee.
And James, you discovered the offenders themselves were actually laughing at it, like they knew the loophole.
The body camera, we don't officially know if they know the loophole, but I mean, if they're laughing at an officer giving them the ticket, the officer's saying, you know, you don't pay the ticket anyway. We have this body camera video.
Oh.
And they laugh back and forth, or I guess the offender laughs. They clearly know that they're going to get virtually nothing for keeping on driving.
So you've done a series of very powerful stories highlighting this with specific examples and talking to our leaders in law enforcement and so on and so forth. And you caught the attention of members of the legislature as well as members of the political community here and the hierarchy in the police department. As a result of all of that, what's happened now?
Yeah, a new standard operating procedure from Milwaukee Police say the officer, actually I brought it with me, I'll read it to you. It says if the violator has never been issued a driver's license, their driver's status is suspended. The member, police officer, shall issue an operating a vehicle without an operator's license citation. Basically, bucking the loophole and saying you must give this second OWL fine. If it's your second one, you should arrest the driver and book them, refer the misdemeanor charges, essentially closing that loophole that we uncovered, at least in the city of Milwaukee.
So that's in the city of Milwaukee. You just mentioned earlier that this is the case in a lot of different cities, municipalities, right?
Correct.
Is there the opportunity for this to become codified, for this to become a law, for this to change in the entire state?
I've been working with a local lawmaker who's been asking DOT, and we've been bugging DOT and DOJ about how to close this. Basically, what an officer sees on their teletype. Mm-hmm. I don't know if it's called a teletype
a CAD
anymore.
Report, yeah.
Thank you. And from there would basically allow them legally that they believe to write that second OWL.
Well,
fine.
I mean, to get Milwaukee Police, which is the biggest police department in our state, to you know, change their operating procedure. I mean, that's a big deal.
Yeah, it was To quote Alderman Scott Spiker, who chairs the Public Safety and Health Committee, it was the result of two stubborn people, him and me, and he laughed. So.
Well, congratulations.
Thank you.
This is something we should all be grateful for, because it's scary when these guys are out driving around after being caught without a license for a second time. This is how it should be. So congratulations for getting that done.
I appreciate you guys highlighting it. You highlighted it a couple of months ago, and glad to be back here again.
Does this filter down to bad guys? Like, will they know eventually that procedure? Like, they don't know what the SOP is and that'll change, but they get the word eventually that whether it's a chase policy or in this case a ticketing and citation policy, they end up finding out. Does word get out on the street that things have changed a little bit?
So this was officially announced, I guess, in front of the PSH committee on Thursday. I'm not sure how quickly it gets out to to people driving. Clearly, it'll get out to them once they get pulled over
and
their
arrested.
Second or 36th time not having a license.
Wow, that's crazy. Give us a peek behind the curtain and what you do for a living. How far out are you working now? Are you working on iTeam stuff that will air in 2 weeks, in 2 months, in eight
sure.
months? How does that work?
I'm revealing all my secrets. No, I'm kidding. I'm working on a story tonight. It'll be on at 6. Not an Investigate story, just a daily turn. And then another story will air Thursday, working on some stuff that'll be next week. Hoping to get some more no license stuff for the weeks following as well. So,
that's
yes,
so
booking
hard to
out
juggle.
3-4 weeks in advance.
When I first started doing that, like as an enterprise reporter and just juggling things, it's a lot.
Yeah, I remember chasing. You chase so many things.
Yeah, you guys have both done it. Don't ask me. You guys are the pros here.
You chase so many things that end up not being anything, but you got to chase it down, and then you're like, oh man, we just spent 2 months on that, and it's not really what I thought it was.
And follow up with that FOIA like 500 times.
Yeah. You do really good work. You can check out James' work on 12, and you said you have something unrelated to this, but coming up tonight at 6?
Yes. Click on the Investigates tab. You can see any of our reporting of our iTeam. I think they all do great work. There's a lot of great iTeam stuff going on in this city. Of course, I'm biased when it comes to Channel 12. The iTeam does great work there. Click on the Investigates tab. You can see all of this.
WISN.com.
James Stratton, WISN 12 News. Always good to see you, James.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate your time.
Nice work. All right. The Rose Gray Fox World Travel Show is heard at 9 a.m. here on Saturdays. I think they ought to expand the show to like 2 or 3 hours.
Absolutely. Then I can text in more questions.
It's so good, Rose, and you can't even get to all the questions. And I want more Rose all the time. Give me more Rose. Thank you for being with us, Rose.
My pleasure.
Hey, before we start talking about AI and its use in the world of travel, Julie and I were talking earlier today, and because of what happened with a couple plane crashes recently, people who are already nervous to fly, probably a little bit more nervous, and I guess that's understandable. What do you say to people who want to see the world or even another part of our country but are kind of nervous to get on an airplane?
Well, we always want to differentiate between anxiety to fly and an actual aerophobia, in other words, a fear of flying. And when a tragedy like this happens, it's absolutely understandable that people are going to have a pause for a moment and think about, is this really still the safest way to travel? And quite honestly, it is. But when you are having irrational thoughts, it's hard to reconcile that in your own mind. So you, as the traveler, have to know what's going to make you feel comfortable. How can I reach a plateau? How can I get to a point that I can still get on this plane and be somewhat comfortable? Some suggestions. Make sure you're rested. No alcohol. No caffeine. Limit your sugar intake. Stay as hydrated as you possibly can. Noise-canceling earphones with some very mellow music that can calm you down. All of those things can make the experience a little more tolerable.
Good advice, Rose. Very, very good advice. And you and I always talk about how if something really makes you uncomfortable, whether it's a location to travel to or a way to get there, just don't do it, because travel should be about
being comfortable. Yeah, I'm glad that Rose says that. She's right up front with that.
Yeah, totally. Hey, Rose, let's talk AI a little bit, because AI is everywhere. It's dominating the stock market. It's in every sector of work. We use it here in the broadcast industry. AI and travel advisors. Talk about that a little bit.
Yeah. So if you remember way back in the old days when the internet was first coming into its own, people predicted that's the end of travel agents. We won't need them anymore. Well, we found out that that's not really true. And what we found out at Fox World Travel oh so many years ago is that if you embrace the technology rather than fear the technology, it can work in your favor. And at Fox, we've really gone and done that. We have got a remarkable technology team headed by Sam Hilgendorf, who is our chief information officer. And we at Fox have provided our travel advisors, both on the business travel side and on the vacation travel side, a tool that we've named Colby, after the cheese, of course.
Oh.
And Colby is a little fox that I can go to at any time when I'm in the system at Fox World Travel and ask him questions. And just like in the blink of an eye, when the internet would give us, you know, a million different options, it takes all of that and makes a much more readable plan for me. Now, I know there are people out there that are listening that are saying to themselves, well, I could do this myself. And you actually can. I did some research. There's a couple of really good AI programs out there. One is called Roam Around. One is called Trip Planner AI. Another one is called Trip Notes. And I played around with those, and they're fabulous. They will give you some great itineraries and some great suggestions. But what they don't have is the human touch. What they also don't have is the help you need when you get yourself in some trouble.
Oh, yeah. And could it have an algorithm in the future, Rose, or does it now where it can find the cheapest flight?
It probably will. Now, again, there's going to be so many qualifiers in that question that we'd have to take it down to a level of, I want the cheapest flight with only one stop, or I want the least expensive flight at this very moment with these caveats. I won't fly this airline or I won't fly this airline. So absolutely, it will do that for us. But what was funny is I read an article where somebody said they asked one of these AI trip planners to give them an itinerary for Ottawa, Canada, and one of the restaurant recommendations was a food bank.
Oh, my goodness.
See? That's what happens. I think you raised such a good point, Rose, because when Expedia and Orbitz came out, people said, oh, my gosh, what's going to happen to the travel agency? Then Kayak and Google Flights came out, and people said, do we still need a travel agent? And don't you find, Rose, that younger people, like I have twin daughters who are 30, are actually beginning to gravitate more back towards the travel agent?
We are seeing millennials come back to us in record numbers, and it's because of, I think, two things.
They want to have good time.
They want to have a good time, but, you know, they don't have the time. They don't have the time that you would need to put into some of these crazy curated itineraries that you're going to see four countries in 9 days and you want to see the highlights. Or they also want to have somebody double check their work. And so that's what we're here for. That's what we do. And again, if you fear the technology, it will be fearful. If you embrace the technology, you can use the technology for good.
So basically, it'll be a collaboration moving forward, right? It'll be AI with real travel people.
Absolutely. And that is the way we're approaching it at Fox World Travel. If we didn't feel that way, we wouldn't have our very own AI. We wouldn't even have gone that far. But this is what's nice about having our own program is that we can customize it a little bit, and it now knows the nuances of Fox, and especially on the business side of travel, the very intricate criteria that we have for each one of our business travel accounts.
It's so interesting, Rose, because it can improve accuracy in some ways, right? Minimizing data entry mistakes and that sort of thing, but also to the point you just made earlier, it's also not always accurate because you can't read someone's facial expression or ask them to clarify exactly what they mean.
Right. Or we can take it all the way back to the beginning of the segment when we talked about what it's like to talk to somebody about the anxiety of flying. AI will spew out all kinds of information that would lead you to believe it's perfectly safe to fly. But AI is not going to say to you, but you've got to know what makes you comfortable.
Yep, that's a great point. All right, Rose, while we got you for a couple more minutes, I always like to talk to you about where you're going and what you have coming up. And so many people live through you doing that. I think that's one of the reasons they love your show at 9 a.m. on Saturday. Lay out 2025. What's Rose doing in 2025?
I got some exciting things coming up. I'm doing the Galapagos in April. And
incredible.
I'm very much looking forward to this. Yeah.
Well, they're shutting it down. This is the time to go with Rose because there are less chances to go than there ever have been.
Precisely. This is one of those places where we've left too big of a footprint, and they're going to start reining that in. I'm also going to be doing Morocco, and I'm also going to be doing Kenya this year. Those are my exciting trips for the year.
Dang. So Kenya, that's where the Great Migration goes through Kenya, right?
Part of it, yep. And so we're hoping to be there for a big part of that. Again, the Great Migration is a seasonal thing. So it's not like we just kind of like when we have to go see the fall foliage.
Yes.
When will the colors be at its peak? When will the Great Migration be happening? But we're doing that with a great company called African Travel. I've traveled with them on a number of occasions to South Africa. They do an outstanding group. We're already looking into 26. We're going to continue that Africa trip and then do Tanzania for 26. So a lot of planning is already going into 26. And then, of course, we've got Steve Scafidi going to Sicily and Malta.
Yes.
And we've got Gene Miller going to Scotland. So I'll be on the road a lot this year.
Oh, and Alaska's going to get snuck in there, of course.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Rose, do you try out some of those like getaways, like the extra things, you know, like the catamaran or anything?
The excursions.
The excursions.
Yeah, I do them. I do them all the time because I do want to be able to talk to people about what they're like and how reputable the company is that I booked with and those kinds of things. In fact, one of your TMJ cohorts called me just today to get some suggestions for Aruba about excursions.
Ooh.
I think that's Kristen Bry, maybe.
Oh, how fun. Yeah, we'll sell out whoever it is, Rose. If you ever need a plus one, Julia and I are both available.
Absolutely.
You got it. You know, guys are always top of my list.
I appreciate it. Rose Gray, check out the show. It's 9 a.m. Saturdays on WTMJ. And check out the Fox World Travel website, too. There's so much good information there, foxworldtravel.com. Rose, thank you so much. Always good to catch up.
My pleasure. Thanks, guys.